dynamic voices for a diverse church. This is Pass the Mic.
Greetings and God bless. Welcome to another episode of Pass the Mic, dynamic voices for a diverse church, powered by The Witness, a Black Christian collective. I am your host, Tyler Burns. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Burns Clan. Please follow at your own risk. And joining me today is the Vice President of The Witness, the author of the forthcoming book,
I Won't Shut Up, Finding Your Voice When the World Tries to Silence You.
Y'all already know who it is. It's Allie Henney. Allie, what's going on?
Sis? Hey, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be on the mic, as it were.
Yes,
it's a little bit different of a setup, though. So if you're watching this, because there are ways to watch this,
yes.
Then you can see this dope setup that we have here.
So as of right now at this recording, patreon.com/pastamike is the way you can watch the visuals. But by this time, we may have just opened up the visuals for people, and then we're going to give Patreon something different. So I don't know if
this is a version, but I have to bring some clarity here.
Okay.
You keep saying it's forward slash. It's not forward slash. It's actually technically a backslash.
What are we? You can't interrupt the whole thing.
But see, it's
you messing with the whole flow. We've been saying forward slash for what? 6 years
Just say slash.
Okay, slash.
Just say slash.
Patreon.com/pastthemike.
Because I couldn't even be loud and wrong.
It is a forward slash.
I don't know.
It is a backslash. Not a forward slash. You're right.
Yeah, I could be loud and wrong. But
right. No,
so it's a slash. But I think
you're right. Let's just put slash and we'll just be...
You know it's the slash. It's the same slash that we've been using on the internet.
Okay, good. But that's a good point, though. See, now you brought up a good point. Okay, I have to admit something to you. Okay, I want to admit something to you, and I feel like this is safe company to admit this in. I have a secret show I like to watch that I really enjoy, I appreciate, and I think is fascinating. And I know it's a black podcast, but I love watching The Crown. Okay, I gotta be honest with y'all.
I haven't seen the new season yet.
I haven't watched it yet.
Okay, I'm behind too. Okay, good. I don't need any spoilers. Okay.
I think it was season 3, the Charles episode, Moondust, I think it's called. That episode was amazing. I almost put it in cultural artifacts. Or I may have put it in cultural artifacts, but I think it was honorable mention.
I don't remember.
I think it was honorable mention a couple of years ago. There's something about this drama of The Crown and seeing it behind the scenes that really fascinates me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the acting is top tier. The acting is obviously tremendous. It's not the type of show I would typically go for.
Right.
You know, it's also not the type of style of show I would typically go for. But I felt comfortable admitting this because it's pretty obvious you followed the royal family saga. Now, I'm not saying you're a huge fan of it. I'm not saying you're like, oh, you're into all the line of succession and all that. But it seems like you're at least familiar with what's going on and you followed it. We were even talking before the podcast that you and Christina Button, who's one of our writers at The Witness, BCC.com, that y'all recorded an episode right after Harry and Meghan's interview with Oprah, which was, you know, took the world by storm.
Yes.
And so I think you follow it enough to appreciate my appreciation for The Crown.
Yeah, yeah. So Christina and I, we did, because this was during our Leave Loud campaign. If you remember our Leave Loud campaign in 2021, Harry and Meghan's interview with Oprah aired during that time whenever we were all sharing our Leave Loud stories. And basically, Prince Harry, Meghan, the Duchess of Sussex, they left the royal family, and that was going up before Oprah. That was their Leave Loud testimony. So, yes, I am a minor royal watcher. So the real thing here is that I love a mess.
Okay,
and
this
the
is a
royal
drama?
Family is a mess.
So, you see, this is why I watch Succession, right? So, because, like, rich white mess.
Exactly.
I mean, I can't. It's just, it's something about it where you're like, ooh, what's about to happen here? And then I think it's also the fact that that's not my culture. So coming around, seeing them, they knew insults and, you know, scheming behind each other's backs and things like that. I'm like, okay, this is a little different than how we would do it.
Yes.
So I'm like, oh, okay, let's see what they're about to do. So
I identify with rich white mess. I love, that.
It's something about it.
There's something about it that you're watching it and it's like,
Ooh. Yeah. Right. It's just a little juicy,
that,
you know?
That probably says something about me. About us,
yeah, probably.
Don't take our black cards, y'all.
But nah, yeah. I'm just saying. Like, and then now another one I've gotten into, which I'm ashamed to admit it, but I got into Yellowstone.
Oh, so, I want to watch that because everybody's
got to watch Yellowstone.
I
got to
start watching Yellowstone.
Allie, you got to watch Yellowstone.
Okay.
I haven't watched the other ones. Because they have 1883, 1923. That's going too far back for me.
Oh, okay. So see, I want to watch. I think it was
I'm not trying to see us in chains, so I just I can't watch that one. It's too far back. But the original Yellowstone, like, okay.
Yeah, I was wanting to watch the original because Harrison Ford, I think, is in 1923.
Yes,
and
Harrison Ford
so
is
I was
in
like, oh, Harrison Ford. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to have to, I'll check out 1923 probably. It's going a little far back, but I'll.
Yeah, you always got to watch out for
Yeah, exactly. So
traverse through history.
And so what's interesting about you is you have been very public about reading Harry's book, Spare.
Oh, yes.
And
yes.
Reading Prince Harry's book, like you've been very open about that. And you were talking to me about it earlier. I was like, this is really fascinating to connect this kind of to some of our lived experiences and also the experiences of being in places that are toxic towards our bodies, places that cause us harm. And then also telling our story, taking ownership of our story, sometimes for the first time. So tell me about the book, Spare, and what, if you enjoyed the book, if you felt like it was a good book, and we'll talk about some of these connections.
Yeah, so first of all, I really enjoyed Spare. So an admission that I have to make, this is the first time that I've admitted this publicly, but Prince Harry is a little bit less than a year older than I am.
Okay.
And so I just always was kind of fascinated with him.
Okay, okay. We see
bit.
What is, well, okay,
and so,
y'all.
So this is...
Okay, y'all.
So we have some, we do have some connections. So his...
Oh, I thought you said we have a connection. I was like, what's going on? You know Harry?
No.
When did you meet Harry? When did y'all meet?
I've never met Harry, but okay. No. So his mother died tragically. Princess Diana died right around the same time that my grandmother passed.
Wow.
And so my grandmother was actually sick and was about to go into the hospital for the last time whenever Princess Diana passed. So the grief that he talks about in the book, it was hitting us at a similar age, at a similar time in our life. And that was something at the time even that I was aware of. So there's that aspect of it that I felt like, there's some commonalities there. Harry is the youngest of two siblings. I'm the youngest of two siblings. Yes. My sister is 12 years older than me, so a little bit more of an age gap than between Prince Harry and Prince William. But I definitely, my sister is amazing, awesome. Everybody thought that she was amazing and awesome. And so then being like the sibling that you're kind of living in that older sibling's shadow.
Right.
And so
that's the thing.
So being the youngest of two and having that sort of lifestyle. I really related to him with that. And then something else that I said, that just watching his trajectory or whatever through life, I was like, you know what? I think that he's going to end up with the black woman. And I would always...
You called this.
I called that. And I remember saying that a long time ago, like, I think it was like I don't even remember like what message. I was on some black message board or whatever. and we were talking about Prince Harry, because I think it was right around the time that William had gotten married. I was like, I bet y'all that Harry's gonna end up with the black woman, and then
sure enough,
he ended up with a biracial black woman. And so I called that because he just has some qualities, and so he has
there's something about him.
But there's just something about him that just said, oh, you know what, I can see him, you know, I can see him getting with the black woman. So anyway, so I picked up this book, I pre-ordered it. Because that's how I was, as soon as I heard
it's
about
so,
it.
So many books. I think so, like a million and a half books in one day or something.
Oh,
like that.
I wouldn't doubt it at all. I was on vacation. I saw somebody reading it whenever I was on. I was like, oh, wow, you're reading that book too. I mean, I've seen it. I've seen it everywhere. Wow. A bunch of people, whenever I started reading it, because I had pre-ordered it way before it had come out, and a bunch of people were reading it and were talking about it on their timeline. So I am sure that it's sold in there, because it's already been or is being reprinted too.
Wow.
So it exceeded the publisher's expectations. But this book talks about this man. He's telling his story. One of the things that you have to know about the royal family is that the Queen Elizabeth, her motto was never complain, never explain. So the British media, he talks a lot about the British media in the book. It's different than the American media. They can print almost, it seems like, whatever they want to. They can talk, they kind of almost stalk celebrities a little bit. And we have that some in American culture. But the rules and stuff are different. So they can really get into your life and get into your business. And so you think about this as like the grandson of the monarch. For, most of his life, he was third in the line of succession to the British throne. So there was a vested interest from the public in him, in who he was. And he discusses some of this in the book. This book is really the first time where he's telling his own story on his terms. Mm. And that was something that, because again, like, why am I going to read this book about this white man that his family, I mean, him even in some ways, is part of colonization.
Right.
I mean, the heritage of the British monarchy is like ratchet as heck. Like, why would somebody want to read this? But again, the intersections of feeling like, oh, we had some common ground just in some different life experiences and stuff. But then also just knowing, hearing his story about after he married Duchess Meghan and then leaving the royal family. And then essentially, like, he had this Leave Loud story. Yeah. And the Leave Loud story is about the racism that he experienced, that his wife experienced, that he was part of as being an interracial marriage spouse. The things that she experienced and then making the choice to essentially leave his family, to leave his country, to leave all this. It just seemed like a really compelling story to me. So I wanted to read the book. And I'm glad that I did, because there was some of the things that stood out to me was, first of all, just the palpable grief that he had over his mother. You feel it sort of diminish. She's present throughout the book. Princess Diana is present in everything that throughout the book. She's a specter throughout the book, but you feel his grief and stuff change. He talks about going to therapy. Like, there's just all this stuff, but that's like something that really stands out to me. And then also, again, just the compellingness of him for the first time being able to talk about himself on his own terms.
Yeah, I think it was so fascinating how, you know, I think what drew me to, and I haven't read the book, but what drew me to curiosity about the book, because I'm not really a royal family watcher except for The Crown, but what drew me to curiosity about the book was how upset white conservatives, southern white conservatives were about him talking about his experience. Mm. And I was like, why is this triggering y'all so bad?
Yeah.
You know, it was very strange. Like, I was like, you know, people are like, ah, he's whining, he's crying, they're playing the victim, all this. And so that automatically was very fascinating. But then also the connection to him being a proximity to a black woman who is enduring racism. And everyone kind of has seen Meghan's trajectory. Mm-hmm. And so her maybe realizing some things she didn't realize before, didn't have to experience as much before, whatever it may be. But him in how he shifted. And how he saw the harbinger of what happened before. Mm-hmm. And he saw the dangers of what happened before and said, I'm going to protect my wife.
Yeah.
And I'm going to keep my wife from this environment, even if that means I have to forfeit some of the privileges of what it means to be, all the privileges of what it means to be royal in this context, right? I was fascinated by that because I think there's a lot of connections to a couple of things, whether that's protection and proximity from husband to wife in an interracial marriage context. And then also, I think I was really fascinated by owning your story on the way out, right?
Yeah.
Owning your story, because we do so much of that here. Right.
Yeah.
We do so much of owning our story. We do so much of retelling what has happened to us, reinterpreting what has happened to us through new eyes, through a new lens. But then also doing so in a way that warns other people, that is a subtle, even if not explicit, warning to people, beware, you know, watch out, caution, because this is what really happened to me. So I think there was that connection and that fascination. But as a black woman, when you see Harry navigating this and then making this choice and this decision, I know that had to probably bring up feelings and resonate with you, especially, you know, being in an interracial marriage. Like, how did that hit you as you were reading that and consuming that story?
It was a very interesting experience, because really I think it could be very easy for people to cast Harry kind of in this white savior exactly. type thing.
Yeah.
And to be like, oh, well, look, you know, he was protecting a black woman. And Harry, in my opinion, Prince Harry was doing the bare minimum
right.
of what, and it's like, exactly. oh, it's so perfect. But he was doing the, and I mean, I say the bare minimum. He went above and beyond in a lot of ways, but he was doing what you are supposed to do.
Yeah.
What you are supposed to do for your spouse. Whenever your spouse is being mistreated by people in your family, especially, but by people in the world, what do? You guard your spouse. You protect your spouse. And honestly, that flows husband to wife, but yeah. that also flows wife to husband,
Absolutely.
Wife to husband too. Like, there have been times where people have been like, oh, I'm going to talk crazy to your husband. And it's like,
Right.
Because it's like, oh, I know that he's going to just, you know, let it roll off his back. But no, that bothers me. And we need to address that. That's the bare minimum. Whenever you talk about, you know, the black and white thing, again, it's the bare minimum. A white person sees a black person experiencing some sort of abuse. You try to intervene, mm-hmm. right? And so I don't want to praise him as a white savior Absolutely. And make it like, oh, you know, he was doing something that was so brave and so unique. Oh, much brave, much unique, much special. Like, no, he was doing what he was supposed to mm-hmm. do. But it's the scale. It's the scale. It's the level on which he was doing
yes,
it.
Yes.
That
yes.
he was taking on the biggest imperial force, the biggest force of colonialism that the world has ever known, the British Empire, the British crown, is responsible for myriad atrocities, myriad wrongs. And the queen, his grandmother, is the, even if she, well, she was part of some stuff, but she's the representative of that.
Yes.
And so then the British culture, the English culture, their whole thing, he was effectively taking that on, knowing what it would cost him. And I think that there's something to be said about that. Because again, we talked about, you know, we talk about this whole thing of like history repeating itself whenever we're comparing Princess Diana to Princess Meghan. There's this whole, you know, and that was his fear of history repeating itself. So his mother tragically died in a car accident while she was being chased by paparazzi in Paris, France. And she died in this tunnel while people were taking her picture. None of these people who chased her on their mopeds into the tunnel bothered to render any type of assistance or aid to her. They just kept their camera bulbs flashing, which is ghastly. And he could see that his wife was heading on a similar trajectory because the media was treating her a similar way. And so he was essentially saying, he was breaking a generational curse and was saying, we can't do this. And I think that all of us have had those types of moments in our lives when we've said, okay, thus far and no more. And
yeah.
I think that what makes his story compelling is simply that it was a scale of what he was taking on. And so he was taking on this force. He was taking on something that he's a representative of this country, of this family, of all of these different things. And he saw protecting his wife. He saw protecting his family that was more important
Absolutely.
than those things. And so I guess for me, you know, I'm sort of like, I mean, if Prince Harry can be like, I'm going to stop being a royal, like I'm gonna stop participating in this system. How many of us
Ooh.
That are listening could like there are systems that some of us are participating in?
Wow,
there are complicities that some of us have that we could probably take a step back from too. That's not even on the scale of some of these other things.
Hey, Hey, everybody, this is Tyler.
This is Dr. Jamar Tisby.
And we are excited that you're listening to this episode of Pass the Mic. But let me encourage you to support us. You can do so by going to patreon.com/passthemic. And for just $1 an episode.
Just a dollar?
Now, that's the bare minimum. That's four quarters. But if you want to go higher, okay, 5, 10, higher. 15, that's 20, all right. 25, whatever it is, that will keep this show going and keep the high quality that hopefully you enjoy. So thank you for listening, but you can take it to the next level.
Patreon.com/passthemic. We appreciate you.
I love that you said that because it feels, in the moment, it feels bigger than what it is.
It does.
And I think when you talk about scale, that's so helpful because if they can stand against this system and this group and this family, and, you know, as you even said, not necessarily condemn them completely and say everything's bad, but to really harshly criticize and say, no, there's something systemically wrong. There's something wrong. There's a rot at the root here. And people were allowing this to continue, allowing this to happen, allowing these stories to be planted.
And starting the story
and telling
things too. There was intention. That was the thing that had me aghast about it. And if you don't want to go through reading a book, there's like a 6-part Netflix documentary, with that, that has the both of them that covers a lot of the ground that the book does. There's a lot more that he talks about just in his personal life that the documentary doesn't cover. But I was aghast at the level of intentionality that the royal family had in planting these stories, planting stories about Meghan, things that would be embarrassing for her or the media. It was just, the British media is like a feeding frenzy. I don't know if you've ever, been, cause I'm from the Midwest and from the country. And sometimes, you know, they have like these fish hatcheries that you could go to and you, can take like some food and you can throw it in there.
And the fish, are
and the fish just all, and they're like all, you know, jumping over each other and like whatever, trying to get this. That's how the British media is with the royal family. Anything that they do is a feeding frenzy. And Harry pointed out, and as did Meghan, that there was so much that was rooted, all of it was racist. And they would go to the institution. They went to Prince King now, but then Prince Charles and said, this stuff is racist. It's not, because they're like, oh, you know, your mom had to deal with the same thing, you know, Kate had to deal with the same thing, whatever.
It's different.
And they're like, no, this is different. And Harry had said that there was a point when, someone, I think it was after they had had Archie, there was some media guy who had posted a picture of, a man and a woman holding a chimpanzee. And they had said, it was something like, you know, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex welcome their baby. And like, this was something that it was a tweet and it had gone viral and stuff within the media and everything. And he was like, this is wrong and it's racist. And we're not, because again, never complain, never explain. They weren't saying anything about it. So the royal family was just kind of like, oh, well, we can just kind of, you know, the queen, her office, Prince Charles's office, whatever. They were just kind of like, oh, we don't have to say anything about this. We don't have to address this. And he's like, we're getting death threats.
Right.
We're getting people who are saying racially charged things to us and threatening my wife. This is not the same thing.
Yes,
it's not the same thing that my mother went through. There is this added element of racism, and they wouldn't address it. They wouldn't talk about it. And that's something that is so, I think that that is instructive in some ways for
Very
us.
Very instructive.
Because it's like, you know, there's one of my favorite TikTok accounts. I can't remember the creator's name, so forgive me. But there is a guy on TikTok that talks about the royal family, but he talks about the royal family as if they were like a trailer park family.
Oh, okay.
And so he talks about, so I feel like that the name that he has for Prince Harry, because I think Harry and William are like Hunter and Connor or something like that. And I think Connor is like, oh, you know, yeah, Connor joined the army, so he didn't have to, and then met another woman, and then met a woman so that he didn't have to stay in the trailer park and like all this other type of stuff. It's really,
I have to check that out. That's interesting.
It's hilarious. It's one of my guilty pleasures. It's one of my favorite accounts. It's one of my guilty pleasures. But it's this whole framing of, if you, we're talking about the British royal family, but you could easily generalize the whole, like the whole everything. You take Prince Charles' name out of it and you put Pastor So and So in there. You take Queen Elizabeth out of there and you put the principal So and So, or my boss or my manager at work. A lot of there's so many similarities just in the response and in the attitude. And I think that him talking about this, that him bringing this out, and it's a white man that says, I mean, he wasn't saying nothing that none of us hasn't said before.
Exactly.
But it's like, it's a white man that recognized these dynamics and these patterns and saw how unhealthy it was. And he was raised in the system. He very easily could have just been like, okay, girl, suck it up. You know, suck it up, buttercup, you married into this. And he
didn't. That's the thing. That's the thing that got me, was that he was raised in that. Mm. And so he knew the language to apologize for the system, to advocate for the system's existence, to over-explain why it exists. Because it's so funny, like you talk about, you know, never complain, never explain. Mm-hmm. Like that's external.
Yeah.
Right? Because internally, you're going to explain, well, you know, you got to know this is what it is. And so the way in which we are facing out versus facing in is very instructive to me. He could have done a number. They could have just went along to go along. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they disrupted this system is very instructive. And it's hard to even think that sometimes we fail to take certain steps of instructive disruption. Mm-hmm. We fail to take those steps of just stepping in and just saying, regardless of if I stay in the institution or not, this is wrong. I'm going to draw a straight line for you. I'm going to tell you this is not okay.
Right.
And it fascinated me because we live in a time where it is probably, it's actually going to become more imperative even than what it was before. More imperative than what it's been before to speak out.
Yes.
And to own the whole story, to tell the whole story. You know, and I think I've dealt with a lot of people recently, you know, just in conversations and, you know, where they'll share things and I'll be like, yeah, somebody needs to know this.
Right.
Like, you know, you just sit back, you're like, oh, somebody may need to know this. Right.
It's like, is this a legal case?
Right. Like, is this okay? Like,
are you telling me things are going to be evidenced in a legal case?
Right. Like, I'm like, what's happening here? Like, what's happening? And it wasn't necessarily something I immediately thought like, oh, okay, this could be like criminal or legal or anything like that. It was more like, oh no, somebody needs to be held accountable for this action.
Oh yeah.
Because it's repeating itself again and again and again. And I think we need to pay attention to patterns. And I think we have a responsibility to interrupt these patterns, or at least to speak out and say, this is wrong.
Yes.
And if we don't, I feel like we're leaving a path for other people to experience the same things.
And I think that we have to become aware of our complicities. I think that it is so important for us to realize that our hands aren't clean in every situation.
Wow.
There are ways in which we perpetuate unjust systems that are even our participation, our presence says that something is okay. I remember during my kind of Leave Loud time, there was a small group of us that actually left our church. And one of the people that I was discussing with that we were talking about leaving and just, you know, what that could potentially cost us. It costs her a lot more than it costs me, for sure. And something that my friend said was, there was someone who came up to her and was like, I see some things that are wrong, but then you're still here.
Oof.
And so I'm not, because I see these things and I don't think that they're okay.
I've wrestled with that one.
But then you're still here. So what does that mean? And that was something, whenever she said that was one of those, you have like those moments that just kind of like arrest your heart or whatever. And I was just like, wow. What does my presence in this institution, me being a person that's outspoken about justice, that's outspoken about racism, what does my presence in this organization telegraph? And then also, what are my complicities in the system? How, or what are the ways that I've apologized for the system. I've been there where it's like, talking specifically about the church sphere, because that's our wheelhouse. I think about being part of different churches where, you know, there was an undercurrent or an overcurrent of racism.
Yeah.
And I'm there, and I'm there because I want to change things. I want to be an agent of change. I want to educate. You know, I don't just want to be like, oh, well, this isn't good enough, and I'm gonna walk away. But actually, you know, trying to be a catalyst for change. But there got to be a point when it was like, am I a catalyst for change, or am I complicit in what's happening? There got to be, and so then whenever you're the person that's the catalyst for change, there are times when you might find yourself wittingly or unwittingly apologizing for the system to the people who are being harmed by the system.
Exactly. Like the people who are in active harm, and you're telling them, well, you know,
it's
going to be okay. Well, you know, like, that's just, you know, how so-and-so, it is. You know, I've really been challenged by that lately.
Yeah. And I think it's something that we have to look at. We have to think about that. And I think that once we do, now it still might mean you stay in your institution, you stay at your church, you stay at your job, you stay at whatever. It still might mean that. But we move differently. And we move differently, I think, whenever we realize where we are kind of faking the funk, where we're kind of, where we're kind of apologizing, we're kind of, you know, polishing over, kind of varnishing over something that is like, really, this is like kind of rotten, but we're gonna dip it in gold.
No, I was gonna say, there was a Facebook post that you sent to us in the group chat. And it was about church and the spirit of offense and things like that. And when I read it, because I read it before you sent it, I was like, oh, yeah, I feel him. You know, like, that was the last paragraph. But you were like, no, like, this is rotten. Like, if you look at the actual what he went through, like, he polished over what he went through.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, snap, I didn't even see that.
Yeah.
Like, and I saw it and I was like, ah, yeah, I get it. But, you know, like, it was instructive for me to hear you say, no, this sounds like abuse.
I remember what you're
talking about. And I was looking, I was like, oh, snap. Like, that could have been abuse. Like, you know what I'm saying? And you just don't think. You think, oh, okay, we'll spiritualize. We'll do spiritual bypassing. We'll make it into some triumphant point. But in reality, no, this is something we actually need to address. And maybe there isn't some triumphant ending to this. Maybe it's actually us. We need to confront this, and I needed to step away and heal so that I didn't perpetuate this to someone else, right?
And, you know, I think that Christian culture, just in general, we sometimes have this false positivity. And then we also, the instance that you're talking about was a leader talking about what to me sounded a whole lot like spiritual abuse. But the point that they made at the end was great, but it was like, ooh, the thing that you're talking about that your pastor said and did to you, it's given spiritual abuse. It's not, it's not like you got a great lesson from it. You got a great instructive point from it. But we don't have to endure spiritual abuse. For me, the more concerning part was polishing it up, like, and then presenting it to other people and normalizing it to other people. Like, oh, look, this is great. This is fine. Awesome. Wow. Yes. This person might do this to you.
I was resilient in the midst of it.
We don't have to do that. And I think that it's so important for us to recognize sometimes you just have to call a spade, and you just have to say, this environment is toxic, but you have to be able to have the eyes to see and the ears to hear that. Mm. You have to be able to have the discernment to recognize I am in a situation that is unhealthy, and then being able to speak up and go. And bringing it back to the point of the book, that was something that I was actually very surprised to read Prince Harry essentially coming to that type of realization. And in hindsight, maybe I shouldn't have been surprised because he saw it was what killed his mother. But at the same time, because the opposite story that he paints is with his brother, with Prince William, who's now the Prince of Wales, the heir to the British throne. His brother very much seems, at least according to Prince Harry, seems to be enamored of that system and even participating in that system. And he was even responsible responsible for planning stories. Him and his wife were responsible for planning stories about Meghan. And it was, and Harry was very flummoxed by this because he was like, you know this system. Right. The system killed our mother. Why would you want to participate in that? Why would you want to be? So I thought that just the fact that he came to the recognition on his own that this was wrong, that this was bad, that the way that the way that the media was talking about his wife, the way the racism, the flagrant racism and stuff that was there, did he come to it perfectly? Did he handle everything perfectly? Was it a perfect, you know, whatever type of situation? I'm not going to say that it was, but I think that sometimes that we all have the power and the capacity to really look at ourselves, to really look at our situations, and to ask ourselves, is this it?
Yeah.
Like, is this everything? Exactly. Should these things be the way that they are?
Yeah. And as we're saying, I think in a refrain of episodes, like, it doesn't have to be this way.
It doesn't.
And we can change that and we can interrupt it.
Yes.
You know? So thank you for humoring me. I felt like there was so much there. And I really feel like you challenged us to think about our own complicity. Our hands are not always clean.
Yeah.
That's something to think about.